This episode is sponsored by Day by Day Book, a guided journal that helps you navigate the ups and downs of change while creating a life you love. For more information on the classic recovery or teen day book, go to livedaybyday.com.
It was not like I was coming with all of these lesson plans ready to quote unquote help or tell people what to do. My experience was very much rooted in getting to know people, relationship building, taking the time and sitting back, being challenged, and, you know, having my own ideas really disrupted in ways that were super beneficial for me. And I didn't want someone, another student, to kind of have that experience where they go, and then when they left, that was it. I heard all the time in Tanzania, once in a lifetime experience, once in a lifetime experience. And I said, this is the worst idea. I really, you know, hate this idea about, oh, I get to have a once in a lifetime experience. Who wants to have something so magnificent once in a lifetime? I said, no, that's not the point. Let's do something that we can take with us for the rest of our lives. And for me, that was what I wanted to create.
Welcome to Journeys Through Change, a podcast that inspires women to let go of the fear and say yes to possibility. I'm your host, Noelle Van, an author, creator, and empowerment coach who spent years in corporate America helping innovators and leaders ride the waves of change with ease and grace. I now work with women to step into change and unleash the power they have to create a life they love. Whether you're contemplating a change in your career, relationship, health, lifestyle, or anything in between, nothing's off the table. I'll be offering up simple insights to help you manage the ups and downs of change and sharing interviews with successful women who took a leap of faith to create the life they knew they were meant to live, sharing their wisdom, advice, and all the juicy lessons they learned along the way. So get cozy in your favorite comfy chair and let's get started. Sometimes life shows us that the experiences we've had over the course of time were actually the building blocks to get us to a place we were meant to be. An idea can come out of nowhere and suddenly we find ourselves in alignment with what we knew we were meant to do, living on purpose with ease and flow and recognizing that it had been the plan all along. At age 20, sparked by her interest in Jane Goodall, Lauren Schmidt took her first trip to Tanzania and her experience began a love affair that she just couldn't shake. This faraway part of the world instantly felt like home and her departure left her determined to return one day to live there, and that she did. After completing her Master's of Social Work from Columbia University, she returned for 10 years more. During this time, she married a bush pilot, raised 3 children, and began teaching at university while immersing herself in the culture, all with an unwavering intention to serve this community she loved. As time went on, she recalls cringing as volunteer organizations would roll into town with programs to educate the community, knowing it could be so much better. So she decided to design her own. As the pandemic forced many out of the country, Lauren stayed to carry out her mission, and from there, A Tree That Grows was born. A Tree That Grows empowers youth to use their passion and strengths to design programs and projects that support communities around the world. With volunteer fellowships, residencies, and an invitation to pitch their projects at a global impact conference, it provides them with the opportunity for growth and self-discovery while addressing real-world issues and providing sustainable solutions along the way. Lauren, I am beyond excited to have you join us today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited for this conversation.
So, Lauren, we have so many things to cover, but I think maybe the best place to start is before your trip at age 20. Maybe give us just a quick kind of, I don't know, synopsis. Where did you grow up and kind of what led you to Tanzania in the first place?
Actually, I remember it very clearly. It was in 8th grade. I was in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, and I had first heard of Jane Goodall. And I was thinking to myself, I said, oh, wow. I said, this looks like so much fun. I think it really just moved me as, you know, how someone went in Tanzania and really created a life, a body of work that felt like it was so deeply ingrained in the community. So I, at that time, thought, I'm going to become a primatologist. And I went to Bucknell and I actually interned and then I took biology. I think it was in my sophomore or junior year. And I was like, nope, I will not become a primatologist. It did not go as planned, as nothing does right now. But it started that initial curiosity. I became really fascinated with, wow, what would it look like to just go? I had never been to Africa other than my, you know, my perusing of the work that Jane Goodall was doing. And I became intrigued by Diane Fossey and just these, again, these women that felt like they were really stepping out and carving their own kind of experiences for themselves. And in many ways, painting paths and careers that had not even really been done before. And I think it really intrigued me.
It brings me back even listening to you. You know, you think of being that young and that feeling of like, sort of the world is my oyster, you know, like, hey, maybe I should just check that out. And it's such a wonderful thing to have that itch that early. What kind of brought on the opportunity?
Yeah. So I was at Bates College and they had this program. It was called the Phillips Fellowship. And I remember actually when I told my parents, they both kind of laughed at me and they were like, oh no, like she won't get it. And I was like, no, it will work out. And I applied for a grant. Even then, I knew I did not want to do a traditional program that felt like it was going with a big group of people and just get what I felt would be a surface level experience. So this was a program where you could completely design your own initiative and they would fund you to do it. And I ended up getting accepted and it was my first, I literally Googled organizations in Mwanza, found someone to respond back to me and was willing to, God bless them, work with a 17 or 18 year old person who had never been to Africa before. And I remember I got on a plane. I think actually my dad actually flew with me halfway to Heathrow. And I remember it very clearly. I said bye to him as I went on my second leg of my journey. And I remember just his face looking. He was like, I hope she comes back in a month or two. We knew someone named Maimuna was picking me up on the other side. That was my start.
That kind of is such insight into your parents too. I mean, your dad sounds like a pretty cool man to be like, I'm going to take her halfway there, making sure that you're okay, but also letting you go do that. I mean, at that young of an age, that's like, you know, when you think about that, that's a bold move for a parent as well, just as much as for you. So that's exciting. So tell us about that trip.
Again, it was my first time and I just loved it. So I was working at an organization in Mwanza, Tanzania, which is like the northern part of the country. And they were focusing on looking at the connection between gender-based violence and really HIV transmission. And I just remember sitting in a room with women. And I remember, it's so funny because when you go on those things, a lot of times from based on what we hear, and I don't think any bad intent, but I think we come with all of our ideas. Wow, I'm going to bring my, you know, my resources that I've Googled at 18 on gender-based violence, right? Like that's going to be a very helpful thing. I was hopeful, right? I had good spirit. I got on the airplane and I just remember I arrived and I sat back and I watched these women in this circle share really from the bottom of their hearts, their own personal experience. Some were starting their own businesses. Some were talking about leaving relationships that were no longer working for them. And I just remember two things. I remember sitting back and thinking, wow, I know absolutely nothing. And the second thing was, this is also the most incredible thing that I've ever seen. I said, this is totally innovative, right? I mean, what I love most about it is that there was no pretense. And I think that's what I really appreciate about Tanzania. And anytime I get a chance to travel there is that it's kind of like the gig is up. No one's trying to like fake it. It's as raw and honest and real as it can be. And I think that's always moved me in ways that to this day, I'm deeply, deeply, deeply inspired by.
Oh gosh, I love it. It feels like you carried that with you over the years, right? It's like that initial experience just kind of has brought you through the years of experience being back there. And so you were there for 2 months for your initial visit?
Yep. So half of it was in Mwanza. And then I did a trip like a week at the end, which was amazing. You know how you have those parts in your life that just, some of them you just remember, right? And I had flown. Yes. Part of this grant was I got a chance to actually go to Gombe National Park where Jane Goodall has her programs. And I did chimp tracking. Literally, I recreated the walk and it was amazing. It was me and these two British women who were like in their 60s. And there was the three of us on this boat. And it was just like epic. I have to say, I was like, I would do that again. It was wonderful. And I just remember like looking out over the lake and thinking, I had never seen anything like that. You feel both so small and so big at the same time in terms of like, you realize how expansive it all is and how small we are. And actually the grand scheme of this whole thing, the nature, the animals and the people, it's just like, wow. It's like, we often think, and I always say like, ego tells us we are, we have the answers. And for me, Tanzania has always reminded me, I don't.
I can imagine it being very expansive too. And all of the sights and sounds of Africa, I've never been. I would love to go though. It strikes me as I'm sure that has been such an experience to live there. So you leave, right? You go back and you go back to school at that point?
Yep, I returned back to Bates. And then I finished Bates, and then I say, wow, there's another opportunity to apply for a fellowship. And I got together, it was actually a group of us, just, you know, a tremendous amount of fun. It was the Davis Project for Peace. And I had written my senior thesis looking at the food for sex trade for street girls. This offered me an opportunity to kind of continue that work and work with another organization and get a chance and now to be there for a year. You can see we're going an upward trend here. It went
more time.
Yeah. 2 months was insufficient. So I was like, okay, let me go a year this time. And again, very similar experience, but certainly taught me a lot about organizations and the kind of ones I wanted to work with versus the ones that maybe I didn't. When I was there, I finished that up and headed back to Columbia to finish my master's.
Nice. Okay. So you got your master's in what?
So my master's is in social work, and it's focusing on international social welfare and social enterprise administration. So I'm really interested in looking at organizations and how they can work in partnership with communities to design and develop programs that work.
You know, Lauren, you strike me as such a, like, I want this to come across the right way, because it's not, when you say an old soul, you know what I mean? When you say that somebody's kind of an older soul, like, I feel like you at age 20 had this curiosity about you that not a lot of 20-year-olds have that, but I feel like you had not only the curiosity, but you had that courage to be like, okay, I'm going back for a year. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that to me is, that's a big deal, right? And to have kind of that agency and ownership of what you're looking to do at that young of an age, it just strikes me. And maybe I think of myself in my 20s, and I think I was a little bit different than that, you know, but I love that. And so you go back, you get your master's, and then what brought the itch to go back?
At that point, so when my last stint in Tanzania, I had met who would become after Columbia, my husband at that time. And so, yeah, we had discussed and planned, and we knew we wanted to go back. So he was a bush pilot in Tanzania, and his work was there. And I was, at this point, in all honesty, just looking for any way to get back to Tanzania. So I was like, this sounds good to me. Let's go. So we got married. The wedding was like kind of our send off to, and our parents were probably like, well, we hope we see them again. But my parents always loved coming. It makes me really happy, like when I hear like what you shared with my dad, and that came up, because he has always been someone, I have very clear memories, always sitting on the airplane with him, someone who just, travel was just something that was always embedded in what we were doing and who we were.
I love that. And I think that, you know, when you see parents that encourage that in their kids, there's something to be said about that. And I'm sure your parents are curious people too, right? That where they were like, okay, well, she's going to go do it.
Oh, yeah.
Not holding you back from that, but being more encouraging and supportive, which is really great.
I'll tell you a funny story. So my sister, 2 years younger, actually ended up in Kenya for 10 years at the exact same time I did. So both my parents had some great Christmas cards, because they were like, there we go. This is like
the girls are in Africa.
They're in Africa. And they came to visit. They, you know, they planned their trips. They've been, I don't even know how long they've been married for, but they are just like, they kind of like blend. They're like one unit at this point. And they just came together. And yeah, even when I couldn't get back to America for like Christmas, when the whole COVID thing happened, like my dad planned with my sister, and they literally had Christmas in one of the resorts. And it's just those things you remember.
I love that, to see that flexibility just in a whole family, right? To be like, okay, well, we're just going to do it. So you're there, and you have two boys. Is that correct?
I have two sons, and then I ended up getting one daughter at the end. So I have three children total. And I actually started my first son I adopted, and then my second son I gave birth to in Dar es Salaam, much to the dismay of my mom, who was like, come home, please.
that would be a little scary for a parent, right?
Yeah.
To be like, okay, I hope that she's getting the care she needs and all of that.
But it was amazing. And then Coletta came a couple of years later. So yeah, at that time there was a university there very close to where I was living that I really wanted to just join. So I ended up teaching social work and then working as dean of students and getting to design some of their experiential learning programs. So really where I started is I started to do a lot with the recovery houses. It was really based on my own experience getting into recovery and having friends in recovery and seeing how they were going to the sober houses and then thinking, wow, there was no social workers at the sober houses. So I said, wouldn't it be great for students to come bring some of their skills and learn and then have these collaborations, which was, again, very raw and unfiltered. And I think even my kids at like 2 or 3 were coming with mom to the sober houses.
I love that. Immersing them early, right? There's so much to be learned just being around people within that environment, let alone, I mean, in anything that you're doing, obviously. But I just think that's so amazing. So you're there, you're working, your kids are little.
Yep. And I'm really connecting with a lot of organizations, whether it was disability or, you know, human rights. We just started to do a lot of work together, and it was all grassroots, which was interesting because, you know, I just think I reflect a lot back on the story because I think at the time I had a certain degree of shame surrounding it because a lot of, again, with the Columbia, a lot of them graduated and they did like UN or things that outwardly sounded so, for me at the time, big or huge. I said, oh, wow. And then I was in Tanzania just trying to connect with organizations thinking, hey, you know, I came as literally in my passport, it was dependent. So I came even basically as someone's wife. That was my role in trying to carve out this identity. You know, what really ended up happening is I started to, again, be in these rooms, really hearing what people were doing, seeing how it worked at a very grassroots level. And then knew from that point that that's where I wanted to be. Had all my children. And then certainly when COVID happened, Daniel at the time had flown back to the US to just started work, different work, different airplanes. And then it was me and the three small ones. We were finalizing my daughter's adoption and then COVID hit. And then it was like, wow, okay, there goes the support for the grassroots organizations or even non-grassroots organizations. I mean, people lost so much, whether it was health centers or English programs. And I just remember like sitting back and watching and thinking, this is a really bad way of doing this.
Like not sustainable. Yeah.
It's not sustainable. It doesn't make any sense that the moment someone who's not from the country has to leave, there goes all of the work that has been poured in. I mean, that feels very colonial and just not something that would work in the long term.
So this is kind of where you got the itch, it sounds like, to start your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
A Tree That Grows is just an amazing organization. So tell us kind of how this got going.
It's funny, like with the name as well. So again, I was in Tanzania, COVID had hit. And one of the things I did is I would just go for these long drives and look at these gorgeous baobab trees. And they were huge and like the roots were going everywhere. And I just remember thinking like, that's it. Like that's for me. It was like the roots are where we discover who we are. The trunk is where we grow it. And then our branches with the fruit is where we get to share that with others. And so I got in connection with some of the groups that I had worked with, one organization in particular that does a lot with disability advocacy. And we said, hey, can we create something that students can experience that genuinely felt like it was more aligned to my version of Tanzania? It was not like I was coming with all of these lesson plans ready to quote unquote help or tell people what to do. My experience was very much rooted in getting to know people, relationship building, taking the time and sitting back, being challenged, and you know, having my own ideas really disrupted in ways that were super beneficial for me. And I didn't want someone, another student, to kind of have that experience where they go. And then when they left, that was it. I heard all the time in Tanzania, once in a lifetime experience, once in a lifetime experience. And I said, this is the worst idea. I really, you know, hate this idea about, oh, I get to have a once in a lifetime experience. Who wants to have something so magnificent once in a lifetime? I said, no, that's not the point. Let's do something that we can take with us for the rest of our lives. And for me, that was what I wanted to create.
Sounds like it was more of an immersive experience. Like you had had that yourself. And then having that be something that's, like you said, it's very collaborative. You're not there trying to teach anybody all the things that you know. They're not there to teach you everything that they know, but it's a collaborative experience between the two. And that's what I think makes it so immersive. Then that can carry on and carry on and carry on. I mean, it sounds so simple, right? Like when you think about it, but you're right. The approach that I think you're describing seems like it wasn't doing that. So you decide, okay, I'm going to start this. How did you get it going? Like, what was the first step you took?
I sat down with the organizations and we just thought of like, what kind of experiences did we want to create with students? One of the things that came up really clearly is that we wanted to put this online. So again, it was kind of the idea of how do we build out? What are the kind of projects that we wanted to build out? What would be the relationships that, how would this develop? You know, what kind of thing, what this would look like? And then actually, when I came back to the US, I started working with a lot of students. And something really interesting happened on this end. And I saw probably in a way, even bigger for me. I went back thinking, wow, we're going to create these amazing service projects. Like, this is awesome. And then I started working with students and I was like, wow, we have students that are really anxious. We have students that are putting a lot of weight into their own, you know, the grades and a lot of external markers of approval. And I said, one of the things I loved about Tanzania, and it's funny because I don't think I've realized this until like fairly recently, part of the reason that I loved going was it was when I was there, there was no grades. I didn't have to worry about getting a 99. I was free. That when I think about what was the thing that actually called me, it was seeing women, again, like Jane Goodall or Diane Fossey, immersing themselves in something that they loved. And because they were doing that, you know, getting the courage to not really think, I'm not trying to get someone's approval. I'm not trying to get in anywhere. I'm not trying to, you know, please anybody. I'm actually here to please myself. And in turn, that's serving so many people. And I think like we get this confused. And that's when I saw it's like, we're doing it actually a little bit backwards, right? It's not about helping. It's about almost taking it in reverse, saying, I might be the one that needs to ask for help in this process. And you know, how few of us actually do that, how easy it is to go to someone and say, I want to help you versus to say, I'm not really sure myself.
Well, and there's something about that that just really resonates when you say that, because I feel like it's almost like a humility. You come to something and you're there to be of service, whatever way that looks, versus I'm here to teach or to bring something. Because I think when you go back to that structural piece that we all grew up in, which is academia, it's all about doing, doing, doing. And like you said, it's you're graded and you're being judged. And this is more like, no, we're going to provide an opportunity to immerse you into an experience where you can help and be helped. It's a two-way thing. It's pretty amazing, like the way that you were thinking through this before you started it. So then you get it off the ground. And was it just kind of grassroots? Or did you start in a particular area that was the focus?
So it was very, I think, organically driven. I smile because the way that, you know, I kind of started in Tanzania was very similar to how I continued doing this. It was, let me send emails to people. Same thing I did in my first trip. I did not know this organization. And same thing here. I started sending emails to whether they were college consultancies in Brazil or whether they were global teen think tanks, and people responded. And it started again. It just kind of slowly grew from there. And it really gave me, I think, an opportunity to see, wow, the need for this purpose work is so critical. And I started reading, I think, a lot of the research as I was simultaneously working with these kids. And, you know, Harvard had come out with a report that said 3 out of 5 young adults feel like they are lacking a sense of purpose. And I'm like, that's huge. Like, this is not okay.
Did you have like from a, you know, like, was it 10 kids that you worked with in the beginning? Was it like, how did it? Because I know you had mentioned something about it became international. You were thinking it might be just US, but it sort of expanded out to that. So how did that happen?
It really just genuinely happened by making the connection. So there, nice. I just, you know, a lot of it was, I, you know, I was reading a book about this amazing school, Abarso in Somaliland. And I was like, wow, these guys are doing amazing work with these students. And I literally, again, sent an email, sent a LinkedIn connection, made that. And then we had actually this last run, some of their students, same things, like we now have partners in Greece, schools in Rwanda, and it's literally a global network of young people. We have actually next week, a group from New York is going to be going to Tanzania. But what's exciting about that is even with that group is that we are going to be zooming in students globally who are also working on their project.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a, yeah, very global in nature. I am very, very much against the idea that these kinds of experiences should be reserved for a select few. In fact, I am really of the opinion that my particular interest, and I think where the biggest impact can be had, is particularly maybe for communities or people who have part of their story that still feels aligned in some capacity with shame. I think this is an opportunity for people to change the story, take it in a whole new light. Instead of seeing it as a shame, seeing it as your superpower and saying, wow, actually the thing that I'm like not wanting to tell people, that is just, I'm trying to like hide in the closet or whatever, is actually the thing. It's actually my right. unique thing that people are going to respond to, that I have to share. And to see that happen, to see, oh my God, you know, students and you know, really doesn't have to be students. It could be anyone, but share something, whether it's about mental health or identity or anything, but to see how that informs who they want to be. That is exciting.
When I think about the work that you do, it makes me think of how lucky you are, first of all, because I feel like watching kids, those light bulb moments with kids, or just watching kids blossom because they're being given an opportunity to show what they can do or how they can help and they can relate it to their own experiences. Like that to me would be every day would be just really rewarding, right? Because you're watching that happen real time. And I just feel like kids need that. I mean, kids, I think, have much more of a social responsibility than maybe generations ago. I feel like they're just more in tune with that. But so you have these global impact projects. As an example, you'd have somebody that's going to present one to you. You've got a student. How does that work? So they present the project to you. You then have them collaborate with that region that they're working with, right? Yeah. It's kind of, I know it's over like online for a while, and then they do have the opportunity to go over there.
Yep. So what they do is it really depends on the student. So some of them will come having an idea, others will not. So we, again, try to figure out with them where they're at. And then from there, we'll always link their story to the project. That for me is, so that's probably the most important part of the process. If you actually, that's where we have the biggest impact, because that is, that becomes their personal why. It's seeing something in myself, which I, the seeing the value in myself that I can then bring the value to others. And then from there, it's figuring out, how do we want to take this project? What is the way that we want to craft it or develop it? So for example, we had one young man, he was again at a boarding school in the US, and he saw and went around and saw that, wow, like a lot of his friends had pictures on their walls of grandparents and families. And he was from Somaliland, and he reflected back and said, hey, I don't really remember seeing that in our house. But you know, I don't want us to lose our history. I don't, you know, I don't want the oftentimes very Western interpretations of my country to dictate how people see it. And he was also very passionate about photography. So he came back during his gap year and he worked on a project to design and develop, like, you know, training sessions for photography so people could document it. He did a whole kind of really online campaign himself, documenting different things in his community and keeping them on an online platform so that they could be there. And this is the kind of work that people can do. And it really, yeah, it amazes me.
And is this part of, I mean, I know that there's the process, you know, pre-collegiate, before people are going to schools, there's obviously extracurricular programs that people are doing. Does this tie into that as well for students that are pre-college that are also looking to put that on their resume? Obviously, it's, I mean, it's an experience, right? It's something that probably is helping them grow and learn more than they probably will in the 4 years in college. No, I'm kidding. But you know what I mean? So is that part of it, is just like helping them to be able to articulate that and what they've done?
Yep. A lot of it is that. So it's, again, someone who's wanting to do a service, but then again, not feel like it's being done in ways that are one-sided or one-dimensional. It's really very interesting because that we're at this kind of exciting space where I actually see us also kind of transitioning and focusing on a little bit in the university aspect, which is something to me that is very exciting, just because I've had a lot of questions of, we're doing all this work on the kids, but yet we're going to college and the research is telling us that there seems to be a problem when we arrive. So it goes back to, again, how do we cultivate that sense of purpose really, yes, at universities? Since our last conversation, what I've been reflecting on is probably actually building out a network, whether, yeah, it's actually companies, universities, and schools in which students can actively work on finding purpose and then connecting with organizations.
So
yeah, I'm really
that's
excited.
So good, Lauren. I was going to ask you, my next question was going to be of like, are you looking to expand? How are you looking to scale it? And there's also, I think, that idea that you may not want to get so big that it's out of control. But, you know, so it's that, how do you keep it small and intimate feeling, but also being able to then sort of expand your reach? So that's kind of answered my next question, because I was going to say, what's next? So you're thinking that that might be something that you explore with the organization.
I really am excited about this idea of, like, if we have, and I think it could be, again, universities, I think it could, yeah, be schools. And I also think it probably, I was thinking a lot of it goes back to whether it's like Gen Z in the workforce itself, how do we cultivate this sense of purpose? You know, how do we bring that? And then how do we, if, for example, if we have different people looking at this, really trying to understand this? How do we then learn from each other? Like one of the things when I was trying to just do some research on is looking at like, oh, we know that mental health at universities is such a big thing. Yet where is the associations and kind of groups of people that are going to be collaboratively, collectively taking this on? And for me, it's purpose is the angle that I come at that when really looking at.
Just hearing you say this, I completely agree with you. I feel like there is a lot of, you know, people are discussing and trying to figure out ways to obviously approach the mental health issue that we have. It's become out of control. Statistically, it's become out of control over the past couple of years. And I feel like there's that, and I don't mean to use this, I'm using this word loosely, but like the academic approach to it of like, okay, well, how do we help kids? How do we get in front of it? And what you're articulating, obviously, is that it's something that you can get at in a very, very different way that doesn't feel like, what if I'm a kid and I'm going through anxiety and depression, and I'm now given the opportunity to put together a project that not only is something that speaks to me, but is also something that is an extension of maybe my experience. Oh my God. It brings me back to like my teen years, you know, when you think about the kinds of things that would have really been impactful. And I think that's just amazing that you've, I mean, because even just when you're talking to corporations or there's so many people that I think would be interested in getting on board with that in any way they could. There's so many different avenues and directions you could take it in.
Yeah.
Oh, Lauren, I love it. I just love what you're doing. I really do. And the thing that I love the most about you, Lauren, is not just what you're doing, but I really, your spirit is so tangible when I talk to you. It's like, you're so curious, but you're also, you look at life in a different way that is really, really refreshing.
Oh, thank you.
Dude,
oh,
and
I appreciate
it's
that.
Just been so, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. I'm going to put all of Lauren's links in the show notes. So if anybody's interested in A Tree That Grows, has any teens, students that they are interested in potentially being a part of it. But so what is next? Is it TBD?
Yeah, well, I know a little bit of both. I would say it's always TBD, but I think I would say there's the magic in just letting it unfold. But I definitely see myself as that. I think we have amazing organizations out there who are connecting with the people. And I'm excited to see how do we within these organizations get people developing, whether it's like trainings or programming for the students that are there to really start, or youth that are there to really start to explore this. So yeah.
Lauren, we're going to see a lot of you. I just feel this. I feel like you're going to be in many different places with this, which is awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're really welcome.
Appreciate it. I know the listeners appreciate it because this is just a really bright light. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. This was so much fun. I appreciate it.
Well, that's it for now. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Journeys Through Change podcast. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or really wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to follow us and leave a review if you've enjoyed this episode. And share it with a friend or on social media to spread the good word, so more women like you can find us and join in on the fun. For more information on the podcast or Day by Day book, go to livedaybyday.com.